Welcome to Cambridge Inside Out.
Oh boy. Well, say your name.
Hi, I'm Robert Winters.
Judy Nathans.
Yeah, we were just shooting the breeze here.
Yeah,
who are you people?
The camera's rolling. Yeah, here we go. Okay. So there was no town. It seems like there's holidays or Jewish or whatever. No meeting last night, but there's a meeting going on right now, Vision Zero.
There's actually multiple. Jen.
There's a lot of committee meetings.
Jen Devereaux is doing. Yes. She's chairing two different city council committee meetings
today.
Yeah, I think so. The first.
There's one later than this one.
Was this today?
This was Vision Zero. Transport. Yes.
And I think she's also doing a health and environment.
But wasn't that earlier?
Maybe that one was earlier, but it was having to do with the airplane noise. I think.
Okay. I don't know.
Yeah. So anyway, they're busy. Actually, it's very interesting. At least. To a civic nerd like me, as the election day approaches, there are seven councillors.
November 5th.
Councillors, some of whom I would, kind of loosely think of as people on the cusp, who might have some reason to be concerned about re-election, they've scheduled this flurry of council committee meetings, on this and that topical issue.
Oh, really? They just all of a sudden appear? Yeah. Don't they have to be scheduled kind of in advance, though?
You do, but the thing is that if you're the chair of the committee
and you can do it.
You can pretty much do it. I've never been of the great opinion that holding committee meetings or doing backroom negotiations is how you score votes. Yeah. I mean, if it's something that's
however,
really
now
high
that they're
profile,
all televised,
maybe,
it's actually made a difference. No, I think it's really good.
I agree.
More people can see it. You couldn't see it before,
right.
Had to wait to get the committee notes,
right,
which could be a while.
In other words, so I guess what you're saying then is
what
that,
am I saying?
You're saying that the televising of committee hearings is yet another form of incumbency protection. Because there are no challengers.
Okay, but you know what? They are elected. They do serve for 2 years. They are paid.
Right.
And why not?
I agree.
And also other people are invited to those meetings to present.
I'm not saying this sort of in a conspiratorial way. I'm just saying
would you say that about the federal C-SPAN and all that?
Well, it's one of the things that's always sort of irritating when you have somebody who really has something to say, and then the city councilors basically use, sometimes they do this, they'll use their position to go soapboxing.
I know, but you know what? Hopefully people can just see through that.
I'm not so sure.
Well, then.
I'm not so sure.
All right, well.
So you get the big FaceTime, and then you take the video clip and you put it out there on Twitter and whatever.
I have not seen people do that from their committee reports, but. I don't know.
We have a certain mayor who's been doing that
regularly. Well, of course he does that. He's the mayor.
Right.
Yeah, you're right.
In other words, you
can be overexposed. We should tell people that.
Maybe so, yeah. Right.
But speaking of just elections, though, we should remind people that registration, if you're not registered, is through tomorrow, midnight?
Right. So for all you viewers of Cambridge Inside Out who are registered, all zero of you? No, actually.
This comes up on YouTube but you can do it online.
You can do it online.
A driver's license?
Right. So there used to be, there are a lot of candidates who always go around, and their campaign people go around with a stack of voter registration.
They should,
papers.
Because to me, that is the most important thing.
They always have.
If you're not registered, you could be all support, but hey, you find out you can't vote, then.
Yeah. So here's some secrets of elections past. One is that, the seasoned candidates know very much about. And actually, some new challengers. I remember Lee Chung, Matt DeBergelis, people like that. Actually, Nadim Mazem.
They go to MIT.
Right. So what they do is they get people who might otherwise not be registered.
Even know there's a municipal election.
Yeah. I mean, there was one year when Leland Chung, I think, when he first broke in, where I think half or more of all voter registration papers.
He was the number one voter.
No, only his second election.
Oh, okay.
Right. He squeaked in sub-quota his first time. But the thing is that he had the lion's share that year of voter registration forms coming in.
Yeah, I mean, it really is.
I mean, he was trawling the streets outside of Man Ray when the Man
was
Ray
that before
was
you could do it online.
Yeah, I think so.
What are the restrictions online though? What do you have to? How do you prove who you are? Or is it provisional until they check it out?
The thing is that when I think they do sort of verify it. So
online.
There's certain things that they can do. So you sign under pains and penalties of perjury.
And you give your address and your age.
But if you're, for example, if you moved here from Somerville,
oh, right.
or you and you register in Cambridge, then you will become unregistered in Somerville because all right, it's
so
all part of the
state. And they'll have a record
database
of that, right? But say you're somebody that moved from never registered before anywhere
else. It absolutely can happen because there's no federal voter database. And maybe that's a good thing, actually. Some people may think it should be that way, but there's kind of a principle about having each state have at least some control over how they do these things.
Yes.
But, you know, if a person came from Ohio and then moved here, registered to vote in Massachusetts, they might very well still be able to get away with voting.
Oh, people do that all the time.
It's a violation of federal law, and it's an imprisonable offense, I believe.
It's the same thing with census. If you have a vacation home, sometimes people will list both places so they get counted twice.
But that's illegal, you know? And who's
going to enforce? That's the whole problem.
No, who's going to enforce it?
Enforcement of anything.
But if somebody does drop a dime, you know, you could end up in some pretty hot water.
Interesting.
Or something like that. Well, but anyway, the bottom line is that voter registration deadline is tomorrow.
Yes, which I assume is midnight. Although if you're using in person, I think you have to go probably by 5. Maybe they're going to be open later.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But,
but check with your... Well, we're talking about Cambridge, so check with the Cambridge Election Commission.
Well, it's pretty much the same
in
every city and town across state.
Right, but I don't care if you're watching from another city. I just care about Cambridge, right?
You Somervillians, get out of here.
I mean, what? Yeah. Wait, is there anything else on November 5th that I should know about besides the municipal election?
Nothing
that we're voting on? No.
Nothing. The sun won't rise that day.
Okay.
Nor shall
Does
it set.
Does Somerville have elections on? No.
Municipal elections as well.
Really? They have the same cycle?
It's the odd year.
Every 2 years? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, there are some people who think that you should have...
Actually, Boston does too. You're right.
That's right.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're
I mean, it's kind of a Massachusetts tradition. Some people have argued that you should have the same municipal elections the same as federal and state elections.
No, that's too much.
You know, you know, it's an interesting question because...
I'm not sure every 2 years, though, but then
you would certainly have a much higher voter turnout in a municipal election that way. And half of the people voting would have no idea whatsoever.
Except that we have PR for our municipal, but not for federal. So it would be very confusing.
Yeah.
Not a good idea. Anyway.
That's true. It's a very, very different style of ballot. It would be kind of hard to merge.
All right. So that's elections. Sense. But as long as we're on elections, do you want to talk about
Well, let's
candidates?
Talk a little bit about it. Okay. So now I think we kind of almost got to the point last week of talking about some of these candidate slates. Mm. And so I think maybe it's worth talking a little bit about slates in general. And then also about the specific slates. So I don't know. Maybe we should talk about the specifics first.
Yeah,
so let's do that. But I also want to give a little bit of background and perspective the idea. So there are, I mean, what is a slate, first off? Mm-hmm. There are, I think even organizations like Cambridge Residence Alliance in previous years, when you said the Cambridge Residence Alliance slate, they wouldn't say, oh, it's not a slate. These are just the people we like. There was all sort of a double talk about it. Mm-hmm. But I think they're all these organizations now are pretty much calling it their slate now. And they are... urging people to vote for their entire slate, and some people are in fact urging people to vote for nobody other than on their slate, which is something even the
and the rationale is that if you vote for any of these people, you're helping each other out, or what?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is it's
because you can only give one number one.
Yeah,
right.
Let's talk a little bit about that. We'll get into the details.
All right, you can talk about PR.
All right, so candidate slates have existed certainly in at-large elections and in Cambridge elections, probably even before the Cambridge Civic Association was formed, its predecessor, which was 1945. Mm. Its predecessor organizations were the Committee for Plan E and a couple of other organizations that merged to form CCA officially in 45. But the predecessor of the CCA was actually the same people who lobbied the state legislature to have Plan E established as a fifth charter option, including proportional representation elections.
Okay.
In 1938, and it was approved in 1940. Mm. So really, they've had slates, effectively, as Cambridge Civic Association slates from effectively 1941 on, even though the CCA was only formed in 1945. And it existed all the way through the entire history of the Cambridge Civic Association, which, sad to say, it kind of strapped itself to the mast of rent control.
And why it kind of went away, you think?
Yeah, and the rent control ship sank after the 1994 election, the CCA influence mm-hmm. started to really dwindle quickly.
And
so
you kind of got to, when you like only one issue, it seems.
Yeah. So we went 95, fewer interest in 97. And you know, I think they may have made it to the point of still endorsing candidates through maybe about 2001.
So they were around that long.
Yeah, but, you know, I actually got onto the board in the latter years. And honestly, it was hard, you know. The Thursday Book Club had more members and more interest at that
when
point.
When you ran as a candidate, was that in existence?
When I ran as a candidate, I was the rebel, and I was rebelling against the CCA.
And when was that?
That was 93. But I ran. Oh. I actually was a candidate four times.
Oh, it was
times.
Before the rent control went out. Yeah. Okay.
And
four times?
Well, actually, you know, I like to say I ran once, I walked once, I crawled once, and I barely even...
Okay.
They didn't have
as many candidate forms and stuff like they do
actually,
now.
They used to have candidate forms,
I
think they were actually more fun for me. But then again, I was a candidate who was pretty glib. If you just threw a question at me, I'd say, "Oh, sure, let me talk about that."
Yeah.
And many of the new candidates were honestly newborn children.
Yeah, and they just got.
They didn't know they had one issue they knew about. You know, and it was It's the way it is. You know, it's proportional representation means it's a little bit of everything. You have issue candidates. You have people who've lived here a long time. People who lived here a short time.
You seem to have a lot of single issue candidates.
It's getting more kind of issue defining.
Yeah.
It used to be a lot more neighborhood defined. Actually, probably should clarify that and say that the Cambridge Civic Association typically had the issue candidates and then the old time independents. Independent just meant not CCA.
Yeah.
But there was a kind of an organized group or semi-organized group of the independent candidates that they used to call capital I independents.
Mm.
And, you know, who were, you know, they were sort of like the opposites of CCA. And so,
you know, in today's terminology, I would say they would be called the liberal kind of moderates, and then maybe the progressives. I don't know. Back in the day, I always thought they were the East Cambridge people versus the Ward 9 or whatever, the fancy people. Because I wasn't as involved then. So that's my take on
it. It's kind of a bit of a byproduct, I would say, of the way proportional representation
or the working,
works.
The town people versus the gown people.
In the early days, I'd say that there was a pretty, it was pretty clear if you were kind of old school townie. Honestly,
Al-Valucci,
patronage politics, I'll get you a job on the city kind of politics. You were probably affiliated with the independents.
Right.
And then the early CCA sold themselves as the progressives. They were actually much more closely affiliated with the Republicans.
Did they use that word, progressives?
Even then, they did, yes. Yeah, but progressive meant
like liberals.
Back then.
And but they were rent control, they were...
not that. In the early days...
Oh, the early days.
No, and in fact, the real selling points for Plenty and the CCA in the early days was good government.
Oh, okay, now you're going way back.
So
yes,
they used to refer to them as...
Closer
the,
to Republicans
getting,
in
getting
that
endorsement
sense.
Of okay. CCA was like the, quote, good housekeeping seal
I
of
see.
Approval.
But more establishment.
Yeah.
Kind
and
of
then
thing.
The
yeah,
and right. the a lot of the independents were, you know, kind of towny and and it was
Mavericks,
a bit of a,
maybe didn't go to Harvard.
Yeah. And that's kind of how the pattern was until certainly rent control flipped everything, because there were always, even with the CCA, there was some people born and raised in Cambridge who were solid.
Yeah, because rent control kind of covered everybody, didn't it? Kind of. I mean, you had East Cambridge people that really needed that, right?
Right, but that didn't happen until 1969. 70.
All right.
But the thing is, when rent control appeared, there were actually some...
That's when it started, right? 66?
Like more like 69, 70.
Yeah.
But what happened was is that some of the old stalwarts of the old CCA kind of bolted and said, I'm done with this.
Yeah.
You know, and there was a bit of a reshaping of the Cambridge Civic Association, which persisted all the way through the 70s and through the 80s. And then by the time the mid-80s were happening, you would have candidates like Billy Walsh arriving on the scene who were now issue-oriented, which
true.
Is a very, very typical of the old independents, because they were very wildly opposed to rent control. But by the time rent control was sort of reaching its final days, it was pretty clear that CCA, if you wanted a CCA endorsement, A, you had to support rent control, and then... anything else afterwards, right? But it worked that way. The independents, for the most part, except for Al-Valucci and Tim Toomey, they were pretty much anti-rent control.
Yeah.
But there was always that East Cambridge vote that was kind of pro rent control.
Maybe big developer, big property owner versus a small person that, you know.
But anyway, that so things were defined that way all the way through 94. But starting in 95, the voter turnout started to drop because there was no more financial interest, quite honestly, for a lot of tenants. So they so a lot of that turnout changed, right? But and then by the time, I think that around 2003, I'm not even sure if CCA even endorsed that year. And I know for sure that after that, it was no more CCA to speak of. Even if it exists on paper, I don't even know anymore.
Well, maybe because they couldn't define who they were anymore. The thing maybe is people are too disparate opinions.
Well, they had become so defined by that one issue. And at that point, you know, somehow recreating themselves is what they began. How they began just wasn't in the, you know, people just weren't willing and ready to do it. So we went through a period of time from about 2003, 2005 until maybe about two or three elections ago where there were no slates at all.
Really?
And the thing is, there was a sort of an understanding, like the old, it was this kind of an inertia.
Yeah.
CCA people still knew who the, effectively, who the CCA people were, even if there was no more CCA.
So there were no, there was no Fresh Pond Residents Alliance until like...
Well, see, that's when that started to happen. Okay. Is what happened was there was a slate of three, I forget what the, Mazin, the blonde girl, I forget her name now, and one other, and it was just a little bit of effectiveness of this slate of three that happened. She's now moved to New York, and I can't remember her name. She used to live on Hilliard Street.
All right.
But then the then what happened is others, groups like the Cambridge Residents Alliance, decided that they were going to get some utility out of having slates, so they did it. And then the a Better Cambridge group emerged as...
they emerged when, in 2017?
Pretty much they were sort
before
of the...
That? No.
They were kind of the opposites. Of the, they were defined as the opposite of the Residents Alliance.
It's 2015.
Yeah, and until they redefined themselves this year. But so the thing is that typically then you had the Residents Alliance slate, even though they didn't call it a slate. But it was, and they put out literature and did all that. And then the ABC group, which said, no, we ranked our candidates based on our questionnaire, but it's not really a slate, but it really was. Now, then it was issues raised about people raising money, using for electioneering, and why shouldn't that be reported? It was allegations of dark money. Because so anyway, so now both the Residents Alliance as well as ABC now are really more like political parties, and they created these little little side organizations to meet the legal requirements for raising and spending money. So they are absolutely upfront now being about being slate makers. But the thing is that 2 years ago, this in the wake of the Bernie Sanders phenomenon, so these Our Revolution chapters were popping up
all over the country,
you know, like weeds around the country. And then so they formed this Our Revolution Cambridge, which I have a strong feeling in the first go around was largely composed of people from Somerville. And but you know, so there but there were some Cambridge people there too. And then they kind of engineered to have Sanders himself sort of helicopter in prior to the election.
Before his heart attack.
Yeah. So, so, but
sorry,
the thing is,
I had to say that.
Right. But the thing is, the Sanders group, the Our Revolution group, was largely their basically their slate of endorsed candidates was essentially identical to the Residents Alliance, right? And that's actually very similar to what used to happen during the rent control years with the Cambridge Civic Association and the Cambridge Tenants Union.
Oh, right, the Tenants Union.
They always made sure that there was about a 90% overlap of their slates so that, that they would support each other, you know, kind of like a coalition of sorts, right? Now it's really kind of weird because, so now this year we've got Our Revolution, which I think really consists of about five people or something, right? But then there's this ABC group, which I think there's really a much a very small core group, and then a large mailing list. And then, but the thing is the ABC group, for better or worse, redefined itself as a sort of a pro-density group, and pretty much strapped itself to the mast of this affordable housing overlay this year.
Well, they're about more housing, That's interesting, because I think in some ways the Residents Alliance now is, I guess they always were, they didn't like a lot of development, but if you asked them about housing and public housing, they were supposedly for it.
I think they've always been kind of schizophrenic, because I think there's
some... Well, this clearly is schizophrenic, what's going on now.
Many of the people affiliated with the Residents Alliance were really more, a little closer to what we used to call the Cambridge Citizens for Livable Neighborhoods. Mm. You know, they weren't for, you know, bigger, taller, denser. Yeah. They were more for livability and things like that. But the thing is, they've always also had a lot of sort of so-called affordable housing people within their ranks.
Yeah.
So I think they, with this overlay thing, they were sort of faced with a bit of a dilemma.
Yes.
So their group has some of both, right? You know, meanwhile, the new organization, this Cambridge Citizens Coalition, was formed, largely defined by, in response to this overlay proposal. Mm. You know, they will, in time, become more than that, I'm sure. But in the short term, because there's an election coming up there, largely defined by that issue.
I see them more as the heirs to the CCA. Maybe.
I think they see themselves that way, and I do too.
Because where they come from, a lot of them, they come from like West Cambridge or, you know, I don't know.
No, I think if regardless of what happens in the election, I sort of have some hope that this Cambridge Citizens Coalition will basically carry on and do what other
because
groups...
some of these members were Harvard Square Neighborhood Association.
Some,
but I think they wanted to encompass more than just Harvard Square. So,
well, I mean,
right?
the overlay thing kind of got a lot of people's attention.
That's
so
right.
The people
so
who
they
were
needed
kinda,
to be able to include them.
They were kind of not really paying a lot of attention, and now they're paying more attention. Maybe this is overall a good thing.
Yeah.
We'll see. Yeah. But anyway, let's just show who's actually on these slates here, and we'll talk
and
some more about
changed,
the mechanics
right?
of slates.
All right.
In a bit
so
here,
just
okay?
Just put it here.
All right.
Okay.
So there was one change, but I'll mention it again.
Right.
So residents, you'll notice that there's a lot of people who are on multiple slates. Like,
well, not a lot. You have one,
there are
two,
a lot of them who are on three.
Three.
Zondervan is on three.
Okay.
Jeevan,
right. You said it rhymes with Steven.
Sabrina Wheeler is on three.
Right.
Right,
he's on three, and so is Risa Mednick's
I think is on two.
She's on two.
Nicola Williams is on three, right?
She is. You're right. Yeah.
So the thing is so and Charles Franklin would have been on three, except that he pulled out from affiliation with this Cambridge Citizens Coalition.
Oh,
because they originally had nine on their list, and now they are have eight.
Well, what's interesting is that the only one that really is interesting is Jeevan, because he is, ABC is really in direct conflict with the CRA, and yet he's gotten an endorsement.
But there's the schizophrenia of Cambridge Residents Alliance, because I think in some ways they're going to be gung-ho for the housing. But there's another part of this, too, which is needs to be said, which is that though some of these candidates... on these slates, other than the incumbents, may well be electable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Many of them are there because they're going to be feeders. They're going to be candidates who, when they're defeated, their ballots will transfer to other slate candidates to help reelect largely the incumbents, quite honestly.
Right.
Now, again, it's a kind of a cruel thing to mention who you think of as the feeders, but you know, so far I just haven't seen enough traction with people like Mednick or... Azeem or
she's
Sabrina
got some
Wheeler.
Good. I mean, people have come up to me
and said they like her.
And the fact that she's on two, what you would think is different, says something.
Right. But the thing is that unless you're in the number one vote on these slates or the number two vote for behind a person who's guaranteed to lose, you know, basically you're just there to pad out the slate sometimes, regardless of what a quality candidate you are. I mean, hell, when I was a candidate, I was on some slates. But honestly, you know, I became more of a feeder too. And believe me, I have plenty of self-respect.
Yeah.
Right? But, you know, but there are some candidates who I would say are sort of the more dominant ones of the challengers.
Yeah.
You know, in my personal opinion, I see that this race could be as simple as who's going to replace Jan Devereaux.
Yep.
In which case, and actually I'm going to come back to us. And in which case here, I think the ABC people are probably putting their money on Adrienne Musgrave.
Yeah, but she's directly opposed to some of the stuff that Jan Devereaux supports.
Well, right, but the thing is that they think they can win a sixth vote.
Because that's
By spending a lot of money and putting a lot of literature out. And I'd say that on the other side, it's probably Patty Nolan is probably seen as the person who would could otherwise.
Replace Jen, yeah.
So I don't think this election is nearly as simple as is it who's going to replace Jen? Is it Patty or Adrian?
Or one of the other incumbents could be out too.
Right, and that's true. So that's what really complicates things, you know. But the thing is that I'm not 100% clear how much attention voters are actually going to pay to these slates.
Well,
but on the other hand, let's be kind and generous and say, in addition to the 1,000 people who actually pay really close attention to civic affairs, you know, there'll be many, many times that of people who are a little on the clueless side, and a lot of the new voters are on the clueless side. And part of the function of slates is basically to make a pitch to the people who just don't know any better.
Even if they just put one vote, that's all that counts maybe for some of these people.
Right. You know, so
unfortunately, that's what's going to, I think, happen.
I think that's definitely a part of the way it works. And, what's the alternative? I mean, if voters aren't super well informed, but they do want to vote, you know, then they appreciate the advice. I just want the advice to be clear.
You think Patty Nolan has a better chance because she's known more than Nicola Williams? Because Nicola Williams seems to be getting a lot of traction.
Right. So the thing is, she may be one of the ones, if there are incumbents who get bumped off, she could be the one to rise.
But you don't see her as a Jan Devereaux replacement?
Could be. I think
I think Patty Nolan Adrian,
Right. If you look at the this Cambridge Citizens Coalition, they're a little bit more closely affiliated with Jan Devereaux type voters.
Right.
So maybe you would be safe to look in there, and there you find Nicola and you'll find Patty.
That's both. True. I know. That's right.
Now, you know, as I mentioned in the past, there's also really strong candidates like John Pitkin and Derek Copa.
Yeah, John Pitkin's only made one of these slates. Yeah. All right, well, we have to go. We'll continue the discussion.
Talk a little bit about more slates and more on Cambridge Inside Out.
Okay, bye.